Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, October 4th, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the update on Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 101. Illinois impact, U of I, 7-day rate down to 0.3%. Vermilion reports record high 44 new cases. Illinois tops 300,000. After 8 days at 0.4%, the 7-day positivity rate on campus fell to 0.3 on Saturday. Champaign County's rate isn't far behind, despite 72 new cases. It held at 0.5. Its recovered cases now outnumber active ones, 4,484 to 406. And with cases ranging in age from a toddler to two residents in their 80s, the Vermilion County Health Department reported a pandemic high 44 new cases Saturday, a day before hosting a drive-through testing event set for 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The sixth most populous state, Illinois, became the sixth to surpass 300,000 confirmed cases. It could be a while before a seventh does. Arizona is next, behind Illinois with 220,399 cases. The next article on the front page is titled, All Fired Up. It's a Sunday special for Encore Career has Old Man St. Joseph's Dan Davis all fired up. 6 years ago, as Dan Davis lay on the floor of his home with his new hip dislocated, he wasn't exactly fantasizing about a second career. I had just retired and was thinking about all the stuff I wanted to enjoy. That completely changed, he said. It was November 4th, 2014, and he had recently left a productive position at the University of Illinois as a construction project coordinator. During his noteworthy contributions in that post was the upgrade of fluorescent lighting in 197 buildings on campus. Prior to that job, he had been a campus electrician for 9 years, bringing his total years of service to the state's land-grant university to 25. His retirement had been expedited by a 2012 fall from a ladder that took out both my knees and tore my hip out of its socket. In the 2 years that followed, his new hip dislocated 3 times, a jarring and painful experience that usually requires medical intervention. The St. Joseph Stanton Fire Department came and helped me get into an ambulance, he said. I didn't think much of it. I was just very appreciative. Something about that third pickup was the charm for Davis's future. Time to get moving. His physical trainer in St. Joseph let him know the Fire Protection District was looking for recruits, and not long after, on a flight to California to visit his daughter, he saw a passenger reading a book called Encore Careers. Its message spoke to him. More than likely, it will be something completely different, but will implement your skill sets, said the man with a few. When I got home, Susie, his trainer, told me of a meeting at the fire station. She said, you should fill out an application, and if you don't, I'll fill it out for you. I did go up there, submitted my application, and they accepted it. Then, 55, well beyond the average age of a probationary firefighter, Davis started soaking up as much information as he could about the science and mechanics of firefighting. November 4, 2017, 3 years to the night they were in my house rescuing me from my hip ejecting, I received my helmet shield, Davis said proudly. The red shield for the front of his helmet indicated that he had passed his 9-month probation and was ready to help out and prevent fires. Now approaching his third anniversary as a firefighter, the 61-year-old Davis is living testimony that age needn't be an impediment to that which is challenging. New starting line. The comeback from that 2012 accident was no cakewalk for Davis, a father of two and grandfather of two, with another on the way. When it happened, he was 53, 2 years away from his retirement goal. The hip replacement and subsequent dislocations left him discouraged. It was a real struggle. There are certain challenges with pain medications. That was when the opioid crisis was in full swing, he said. It's not a tap dance. It's a balancing act. That definitely put me down. Unknowingly, that experience was preparing him for the emotional side of serving as a first responder. I can definitely relate to the people who need our help. There is strength in compassion, he said. When he made the decision to retire, he knew he wanted to continue to serve in a meaningful way. Having lived in St. Joseph since 1992, it made sense to him to give back to the community where he had raised his son and daughter. He was also elected to the village's Board of Trustees in 2019. Being able to serve my community and the district in both capacities is an earned honor. I spell it encore, honor and core beliefs, he said of his new starting line. People are letting me and helping me provide this service, he said. The men and women at the fire department are allowing me to work with them. The citizens are helping me learn about small government. Day availability experience. Being retired means that Davis is available to respond to calls for help during the day when most of his fellow volunteer firefighters are at their full-time jobs. I still respond to 2 a.m. calls. I have no preference, he said. That's part of the oath, is that you respond without hesitation or discrimination. 65% of our calls are medical and then rescues, such as an auto accident on I-74 or US 150. Those require medical attention, along with extrication or traffic management, he said. Soon after passing his probationary period as a firefighter, Davis went to school to become a first responder medic, the step before emergency medical technician, which precedes paramedic. In his 3 years with St. Joseph Stanton, Davis said he's been fortunate that the district has paid for him to receive training at the U of I Fire Service Institute. He's completed almost 160 hours of classroom and field training to compensate for his lack of hands-on experience. The Institute has been instrumental in me gaining experience, he said. The Fire Protection District has given me scholarship after scholarship because they saw the ambition level. They recognized what my goal was. Beyond the empathy he developed from knowing what it's like to be the helpless person on the floor, Davis' knowledge from his prior jobs has been beneficial to his colleagues. With his construction background, anything to do with entry on buildings is in Davis's wheelhouse, said Fire Chief Josh Reese. He's into a lot of the electrical stuff. Having an older guy come on gives us a little different perspective, added Reese, a firefighter for 18 years. He's seen more things in the world. Assistant Chief Casey Buss, a second-generation St. Joseph Stanton firefighter who grew up around the fire station, said, Davis is a great teacher. With his construction and electrical background, if you are trying to explain something to somebody, he's got the knowledge and right terminology to make that stuff come out, Buss said of Davis's way of explaining. It's like a light bulb going off over someone's head. No age discrimination. Davis said the day he graduated from the Fire Service Institute's entry-level firefighting course was his birthday, and the battalion chief in charge of the program asked his 80 classmates to sing to him. At the end of it, somebody goes, "How old are you?" And I said, 58. There was a big hush, he said. Most of the people there were in their 20s and 30s. The battalion chief said, "You're never too old to start this." Buzz, 33, admitted that when Davis applied to join the department, he was skeptical that his classmate's dad and first T-ball coach could handle the demands of the job. "My first thought was, oh boy, we've run some medical calls on him," he said. But Davis's work ethic blew away his younger colleague, a 15-year firefighter. "He is extremely passionate," Buss said. Reese added that Davis has been an asset to the new fire station, opened a year ago. The chief asked Davis to do the final walkthrough with the builders and develop the punch list of items that might need attention. Davis said he was most proud that Reese asked him to select the flagpole. He researched and learned that the pole should not exceed the height of the building. "Instead of a bright, shiny aluminum, I selected black bronze, the same color as the trim on the building," he said. "I went with a 25-footer. He also chose a model with interior halyards to protect the hoisting mechanism from the elements or vandalism. The added bonus of that feature is that passerbys hear the rustling of the flag, not its parts clanking against a pole," Davis said. It's that kind of insight that his colleagues appreciate. Still, he's not immune to razzing. "They call me Grandpa, an old man, and ask, are you allowed to drive at night? The continuous ribbing, the stuff that goes on to keep you sharp and lighthearted, especially when we do some of the most difficult responses," he said. "It's part of the therapy of dealing with what you're faced with sometimes. It's a tricky trade." Overwhelming gratitude. Davis's loves have a newfound purpose that is not only interesting to him, but also adds value to his community. His favorite part of the job? Helping people. His least favorite part? Loss. I've seen enough. He is just happy to do whatever the fire department wants and enjoys learning from his coworkers and teaching them a thing or two. I do find myself providing or suggesting ideas on how to help process something or work through it, he said. I honestly think they listen to me and contemplate it. They give me a lot of energy. Their drive and desire and determination reignite that within myself. As for his hip, the last model the doctors installed was designed for a 35-year-old and is working fine. It's much better, he said, admitting he can get as tired as the next person on a fire call. Jumping is really challenging, but in firefighting, there is a lot of crawling and climbing. Last year, Davis, who is unmarried but has a girlfriend, said he found he couldn't stay away from the fire station. We had a series of public events, and October is Fire Safety Month. Last October, we did the Elite Learning Center, the Lutheran school, and a program at the elementary school, he said, rattling off events in which he participated. And then there was the open house when the new station opened. In 2019, I was going full steam, and I was nominated as the Firefighter of the Year at our January meeting. At our annual holiday party, I was the recipient of the Russell L. Chisholm St. Joseph Stanton Firefighter of the Year Award, he said, choking up. It was just one of the things that happened, and you don't even totally realize how you got there. Being recognized by my peers, I don't care if I was 60 or 20, it still would have made the same impression on me. I am so thankful because retirement is difficult, especially for men. We get our value system through the work we do. Being accepted into the fire service family and culture is an intrepid territory. They will test your mettle every day. You have to have that tempered steel to cut it. No pun intended. Continuing on the front page is an article headlined, 8-year-old is always happy dancing. Heart transplant recipient. Mom and daughter gearing up for a heart walk on October 10th. By Deborah Pressey. More than a year after her heart transplant, 8-year-old Macy Meyer of Champaign could probably teach her fellow humans something about being happy. Born with major medical issues, She's undergone 5 open-heart surgeries, the first one soon after she was born, and is unable to walk or talk. And none of that stops her from smiling, which she does a lot, or dancing by waving her arms or enjoying a swing ride, said her mom, Danielle Duncan. She's literally always happy, no matter what, Duncan said. Macy was born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome, a congenital heart defect in which the left side of the heart doesn't form properly. She was also born with a blood clotting disorder and a chromosomal abnormality that has caused developmental delays, Duncan said. What led to her transplant in July 2019 was heart failure and the discovery of a large blood clot in her left ventricle a few months beforehand. Because it would have been too dangerous to remove it, the clot was left in place until her transplant, Duncan said. As she looks back now, Duncan said, it was a strange thing to pray for that the blood clot would remain where it was. Please God, don't let it move, as they waited for the transplant. Macy had another setback during her transplant surgery. Another blood clot formed in her left leg that damaged her lower leg and left her foot positioned at an angle, Duncan said. While it may be a few years down the road, Duncan hopes her little daughter will one day be able to walk. And despite everything that's happened, Duncan prefers to focus on the positives. A Stratton Academy of the Arts third grader, weighing in at 29 pounds, Macy is learning online this year, like her classmates. Though school for her is one-on-one lessons with a special education teacher. Macy is still probably at about pre-kindergarten level academically, Duncan said, but she has made huge strides this last year. Duncan describes her daughter as a spunky kid who is rarely upset and loves books, music, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse cartoons, and riding in her special supportive swing in the backyard. And she's a huge snuggle bug, Duncan said. And when she lifts her daughter in her arms to dance, Macy joins in with her own arms. She does these adorable things with her arms. She shakes them all around, Duncan said. Duncan said she plans to gather a team to walk on Macy's behalf October 10th during the annual Champaign-Urbana Heart Walk, a fundraiser for the American Heart Association. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, this year's event won't be a large group walk. Instead, participants are encouraged to get out and walk while practicing good social distancing, wherever they are, and connect with other walkers and the Heart Association digitally. What Duncan wants others to know is the importance of being aware of congenital heart defects and of being prepared during pregnancy. Macy's heart defect was discovered during Duncan's pregnancy, and Macy underwent her first surgery at 8 days old. The annual Heart Walk in Champaign County is being chaired this year by Carl cardiologist Dr. C. Kenneth Bodine and Luke Sullivan, vice president of the Carl Cancer Center Heart and Vascular Institute and Neuroscience Institute. Bodine said the Heart Association raises money for research, education, and community programs, including CPR instruction. Cardiologists now treat many adults who were born with congenital heart disease, have had corrective surgeries, and have made it to adulthood, he said. It's basically from all of the research and innovations that have gone on over the years that children like that have been able to survive, Bodine said. The medical director for Carl's Cardiac Rehabilitation Center and Echocardiography Lab, Bodine said, the Heart Association encourages taking charge of your own heart health and stresses the importance of lifestyle in preventing heart disease. It is the number one cause of mortality and morbidity in this country, and a lot of it, the typical risk factors we're dealing with, are preventable if people have a heart-healthy lifestyle, he said. And continuing with the next article by, it's an opinion by Tom Kasich, titled, End May Be Near for Illinois Industry, Hear from the Beginning. A couple decades ago, the line about Illinois was that we were the Saudi Arabia of coal, with about 15% of the nation's economically recoverable reserves of the fossil fuel. But the demand for coal from Illinois or anywhere else in the United States is shrinking. The U.S. Energy Information Administration reports that coal production in Illinois during the first half of 2020 amounted to 16 million tons, a drop of 31.5%. In 2019, the state produced about 45 million tons of coal. And virtually every month brings an announcement about the proposed closure of another coal-burning power plant. Last week, Vistra Energy announced that it intends to close four more coal-fired power plants in Illinois by 2027. Most of them legacy plants that had been built and operated by utility companies like Illinois Power that are no longer in business. Vistra is set to close its Newton, Baldwin, Kincaid, and Joppa plants. It had already announced that it would shut down its Edwards plant near Peoria by 2022. About two dozen coal plants in Illinois have been retired in the last 15 years, including the Vermilion Station near Danville and the Hudsonville plant about 100 miles southeast of Champaign in Crawford County, near Sydney in the mid-1880s. But the future is near dim for Illinois Basin Coal, the Institute says. From the beginning of 2019 through 2024, it wrote last year, at least 15 U.S. plants that buy Illinois Basin Coal in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Tennessee will be fully or partially retired. And plants that remain in service will use less coal as competitive electric markets compel a shift to newer, less expensive, and cleaner wind, solar, and gas generation, increasingly supported with energy storage. In fact, more than 30 wind farms are in operation in Illinois, producing about 10% of the state's net generation. And as Vistra Energy retreats from coal-fired power plants, it is investing in solar farms in Texas and an energy storage system in California. The slow death of coal is not without its positives. Shutting down the four Vistra plants in Illinois and two in Ohio will eliminate the equivalent of a year's worth of carbon emissions from more than 10 million passenger vehicles, according to the Sierra Club. And the Energy Economics Institute says that mine closures and job losses can be offset by cleaner air, non-agricultural income for farmers and local governments from renewable power projects, and lower electricity costs and economic activity from the build-out of once the Vistra plants are retired. Only four large-scale coal-fired power plants will remain in Illinois. The promise of a resurgence of coal, remember the FutureGen project in Tuscola that would have burned Illinois coal but stored the captured emissions underground, or President Donald Trump's campaign pledge to save the coal industry, has run into unforgiving economics. The decline of the American coal industry, more generally, is gaining momentum, pushed out by cheap gas from fracking and rapidly falling costs for wind, solar, and storage, said a 2019 report from the Nonprofit Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. It predicted that most of the once mighty Illinois Basin coal industry would be gone within 20 years. It's had a long run. The Illinois State Geographical Survey reported last year that more than 7,400 coal mines have operated in 76 Illinois counties since before it became a state. Vermilion County had more than 600 operating coal mines between 1863 and 2006, although there are none today. Sunrise Coal of Terre Haute, Indiana, has plans to build a mine near Sidel. Douglas County had two mines that operated near Newman between 1946 and 1991. Ironically, the 48-turbine Harvest Ridge Wind Farm is located on virtually the same land. Even Champaign County had a mine. Tom Kasich's column appears Sundays in the News Gazette. He can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. The Baldwin Energy Complex near St. Louis is one of four coal-fired power plants in Illinois that owner Vista Energy said it plans to close by 2027. And continuing with Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Russo. The Rand Tool Press published its final edition this week, leaving editor Dave Hinton feeling bad for our readers. It almost feels like a death in the family. Hinton said he was touched by the response from reminiscing readers this week, as well as the demand for the final keepsake issue. In the newspaper business for more than 40 years, Hinton took great pride in delivering top content as Rantoul's go-to source for news since he took the job in 2006. Starting this week, the pride of Parkland College will bring that same professional, aggressive approach to our newsroom. I'm happy to announce Hinton as the editor of the News Gazette's Our County section, which we unveiled in June as a way to beef up coverage in the towns and villages surrounding Champaign-Urbana. His veteran presence, he started at the Paxton Record in 1978, will allow us to expand the section in a time when many newspapers are cutting back. Newspapers provide a vital service, much more than a 30-second soundbite ever can, said Hinton, a married father of three. I'm looking forward to getting to know a bigger area better, and I'm glad I will still be able to cover Rantoul. And continuing with a few notes from this day in history. Area history in 1920, Champaign Rotarians discussed various improvements for the city, including more street signs, better care of trees, establishment of a park system, and improved parking at the Illinois Central train station. In 1970, Illinois got out to its best start since 1964, raising its record to 2-1 with a convincing 27-0 whitewashing of Syracuse before 39,357 at Memorial Stadium. In 2005, a former mayor of Freeport and state senator was named city attorney in Urbana. The city council voted unanimously to confirm the appointment of James L. Gitz, 57. He was to begin work sometime in the next week at a salary of $90,000. International history today's highlight: on October 4, 1957, the space age began as the Soviet Union launched Sputnik 1, the first artificial satellite into orbit. On this date, in 1861, during the Civil War, the United States Navy authorized construction of the first ironclad ship, the USS Monitor. In 1951, the MGM musical An American in Paris, starring Gene Kelly and Leslie Caron, had its U.S. premiere in New York. And in 1957, James R. Hoffa was elected president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, and the family comedy series Leave It to Beaver premiered on CBS. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for October 4th, 2020. Please stay tuned.